Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Viva el Presidente!
All right, it's Friday here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan on behalf of my co-host, co-founder, and good friend, Patrick Foster. I am here without Patrick today, but we're doing a special series on the show The Young Ones every Friday for 6 consecutive weeks. And my co-hosts for this special experiment are Will Piper and Stephen Routledge. Hello, mates.
Hello.
Hello again. Hello again. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so why are we talking about The Young Ones? Well, because it's kind of related to music. Related enough that we can talk about it. And it's a beloved 80s British comedy, I think beloved by many people in our community. So we just thought it'd be a fun thing to talk about, right? That's it.
Sounds good.
All right, nothing more. Last week, if you didn't hear it, go back and listen to it. We talked about the show in general and the first episode, Demolition. Today is Series 1, Episode 2, Oil. And before we get into that, I just want to mention real quickly here, because we, Steve and I love to talk about the differences between the English language on each side of the Atlantic, right? So series is what we would call a season of a show.
Right.
We would call a series the whole run of the show.
Right, okay.
Like all the seasons together would be the series. Like when you have a series finale, that's like the end of the whole thing.
Right. And a series in British TV is usually only like 6 episodes, right?
Being a series, a season?
Yeah, season. In a season in America, though, a season, I mean, used to be like 22 episodes.
Right.
Some, but back in the 60s, it was like 30-some episodes. I mean, it was
right. They were always shorter in British television, I think. But what do you call, so a series is... how do you define series, I guess? What is a series?
What you call a season is what we would call a series.
Right.
However, since Netflix and sort of box sets and streaming has become a thing, season is becoming more adopted here because there's so much is presented as news. You know, that's how it's titled in the format it's presented. But yeah, you would be... So, yeah, if you say where you're saying the series is the whole overall thing, that would just be... Well, that's the show or the program, yeah. So there's no kind of word for the whole series of The Young Ones. It's just The Young Ones, Series 1 and Series 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is there also a tradition, Stephen, where they do like a longer episode, like a Christmas theme sometimes? Because I know I've seen The Office had like, its final episode was actually like an hour long and it was like a Christmas. And I think I've seen a few other British shows that did that.
Popular shows would get a Christmas special, yeah, because there'd be big ratings pullers, you know.
How much I wish The Young Ones had done a Christmas episode. It would have been magnificent.
So, yeah, you quite often get a Christmas special of a popular show. One that springs to mind it would be a show called Only Fools and Horses, which was hugely, hugely popular. Much more mainstream comedy. Again, started off in the 80s and ran through into the 90s, but about a Cockney wide boy called Del Boy. And yeah, it's a whole other thing. But there's a lot more episodes of that than there are of The Young Ones.
Yeah. 12 total.
Yeah, so it's 12 total. So 6 per series. So we're on Series 1, Episode 2, Oil. Okay, so let me just set this up here.
Once in every lifetime comes a love like this.
As we mentioned in Demolition, the flat where they were living is destroyed now.
By a plane.
starting to be demoed by first Vivian and then the demo crew, and then a plane crashed into it. So that's gone. That's out, right? But they are now moving into an equally disgusting flat.
Right? And they're not upset really about this at all, really. It's just Everything they do, they just take it very casually.
That's right. That's right. So they enter their new flat. One thing I really liked on this, sometimes the show will resort to corny humor. There's a big pile of mail that they encounter, and there's some dialogue between Neil and Mike about the mail, and then Mike says something like, they're probably Bill's, and then Neil says,
who's Bill?
Right? It's like a rim shot sort of joke, right? But I still laughed at it. Maybe because it was so unexpected in a show like this.
And also Neil's so deadpan, isn't right. he, about the white?
Yeah, it's the perfect, he's the perfect one to give right. that line.
Right, right. Immediately, Vivian and Rick fight over a bedroom. It's, I think this is sort of the establishment of their real relationship, right? Mm-hmm. That they're always at odds, they're always fighting. I think Rick, because he wants to be sort of the leader of the group.
Yeah, he fancies himself the leader.
Right. And then, of course, you know, but Vivian really knows how things work, right? So so they get in a fight over whose bedroom this is, and it sort of goes back and forth a bit, and then Viv ends the fight by just setting the bed on fire.
Again, very casually setting the bed on fire. And it's a big fire.
It is. I always wonder how they filmed that.
I don't know. There's another fire coming up that I've read something about that is even bigger.
Okay. Yeah. But then, of course, once he you can tell he hadn't quite thought this through. He sets the bed on fire, but then they have an argument over whose room it is not. And Vivian, he sort of gets flustered a little bit. He sort of realizes he may have made a mistake or something here.
Oh, I didn't have the bedroom. I don't want it. It's not mine.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
You said it was yours just now.
So did you?
No, I didn't.
Did it! Neil, your bedroom's on fire.
This was my bedroom. Oh, no.
But anyway, then they just decide it's Neil's room. And Neil just accepts this. Oh,
yeah, of
man.
Course. Right. Yeah, Neil accepts it, of course. Right. He's Neil.
You know, it's like such a bummer, right, that his room is on fire. Okay, now, here's the scene, right? Mike claims his bedroom, which actually starts, he even mentions, like, sort of like, put a caption here. Like, this is going to be a big scene. He starts off by just opening a suitcase and spreading, like women's undergarments around to establish, like, that he's the cool guy, that this would that this would be something that would happen in his room, which, of course, it doesn't. The implication, because he's doing this himself. But then, who wants to take this on? Who does he discover in his room?
It is so bizarre. He discovers Buddy Holly hanging from it's like a parachute? Or
looks like it.
I thought you were dead.
A lot of folks did, but it ain't harmed my career any.
No.
Like the implication is he somehow not only survived the plane crash, which was, 30 years ago at this point.
In like Iowa,
In Iowa, and somehow ended up in London.
Yes, he's, like, still he's been alive. Hanging there all that time, isn't he? That steam.
And he plays that song. What's it called? Cuckoo Daddy Long Legs.
Yes, he's hanging upside down as if he crashed through the ceiling, right? But he has a guitar.
He's got his guitar. He's in like full Buddy Holly.
Is it a Telecaster? Does he have a Telecaster there?
A Stratocaster.
He has a Stratocaster. Okay. Yes, totally. Whoever was the actor, I did not look this up. I don't know if you guys did. Does a pretty good Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a fun little song, too.
Yes. But before so the new song he plays is Cuckoo Daddy Long Legs, which is based upon the fact that he's apparently been eating insects to survive.
Yeah. And was it like a crickets pun or?
I guess so. There's some mention of the crickets. But before that, is it an even better joke about the Beatles? Right?
And you can easily miss it, can't you? It's very. It's not highlighted or set up, is it? It just goes past in a blink.
Yeah.
Because when he says something effective, I've been enjoying your English Beatles, you think like the music, like Buddy Holly would be into their sound, right? But then he very quickly like eats a bug, right? So that's what he's talking about, is the actual Beatles. Okay, so then he tells Mike he has this new song, he starts to play it. It's again about a spider.
Spider.
because this is all he has in his life for the last, you know, 20 years or more. And Mike then, you know, is very excited and tries to record it on a tape recorder that he had, and also then starts calculating how much money he's going to make off this Buddy Holly revival, right?
But he's still hanging the whole time.
Yes, hanging upside down while he's playing this, right? And it, but it comes off as a reasonable sort of Buddy Holly-esque sort of song, too.
Yeah,
right?
It's not bad.
Saturday night, hanging around for a fight, fought a real cutie with a dust in my flute.
Like, there's records and tapes, videos, overseas sales, cable TV. That's 60% McCartney, 40% me. There's got to be 25 million in this.
Rain fly pie with a mosquito side salad. 23 years on a meat free diet. Beatles, crickets, gonna get you sick. Here's a little sucker and you ought to try it. Daddy long legs. Your bed makes more money than Peggy said.
So all of Mike's hopes of riches are for naught, because at that moment, Buddy Holly then crashes into the floor and through the floor and dies.
Yes. After all that time.
Right. That's right. That was the moment. Okay, then we go to Neil, who's in the kitchen. He's trying to make tea. He's very put upon, you know, as normal with Neil, that he has to do all the work. The, at one point, he opens cupboards and dishes just come crashing to the floor, right? But as he's trying to make the tea, he rubs a pot and a genie appears, who apparently he cannot
see.
They
can't see him, right. No. Okay, that took me a second to figure out.
He has no knowledge of this, but we see that a genie appears because then he starts to grant Neil wishes, but they're by accident. It's just Neil wishing that things would be different in his life, and he gets the wishes granted. You know, one of them being that all the dishes, you know, sort of magically go back into the cupboard. Mm-hmm. And then another that he wishes he had six pairs of hands so he could, you know, do all this work that's been put upon him, and he magically gets all these arms, right? Yes. So again, the absurdity of the show. But then what I thought was really funny is as he goes to show off the six pairs of hands to Rick, Vivian decides he is going to have to make the tea because Neil will not do it, and he kills the genie by pouring, like, I guess, boiling water into that pot, right? You hear a scream, and then the six hands all disappear. So there you go. All right, then you see Mike dragging Buddy Holly, the body of Buddy Holly, in a sack toward the cellar. And then here's what you were saying, Rick, or Rick, here's what you were saying, Will, about Rick and the explosion on the stove.
So I was watching some, you know, 10 things you didn't know about the Young Ones video or something, and they said, according to this guy, apparently the tech or whatever, the guy who was supposed to do it put like a certain amount of explosives in the stove for the effect, but somebody else came by and thought no one had put the explosive in, so he put more explosives in. So when it like really took Rick Mayall by surprise, and you can kind of see it. Like, it's a big explosion.
Not only that, it's like it goes in slow motion for just a bit there. So yes, you had a sense as a viewer that something was off.
Mm-hmm. I like they left it in though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you got this whole bit though with Mike going on about they're talking about arguing about the laundry, that he's going to do his laundry and not taking their laundry. Because I think that what is clearly a dead body in a sack, because it's got, you know, it's so obvious to anyone with eyeballs that is a dead body, he's carrying a dead body down the stairs, that they think he's actually just doing, he's sneakily trying to do his own laundry without doing their laundry for him, and it's like completely missing the whole point that there's a dead body there.
Yeah,
never mind your dirty socks.
And then the joke builds upon that because they have like a whole like house charter that they agreed upon.
What about the people's charter we drew up? Right, laundry. Right, none of the guys, right, no matter what, like not even if they've been eaten by wild dogs.
Hey, that's my clause.
Shall go to the laundrette without first collecting all the other guys' dirty gear.
Yeah, clause 83.
Except for Mike. Oh. Sorry.
That's all right.
Except, yes.
Which, again, it then establishes that Mike really has the true power in the house somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now here's the thing. After the stove explosion, then we cut to these two old men in the cellar, but they think they're at sea or hallucinating or something. And they heard this explosion, which I guess is the only sort of way they could tie this in. It goes on seemingly forever and makes almost no sense to me at all.
Yeah. And it's not that funny, really.
No,
it's just
not.
Weird.
Yeah, it's almost like they found this footage in the archive. I thought, I'll just splice this into this episode. It was really weird, wasn't it? I mean, the only thing that ties it in is that when Mike finally appears at the door
right.
with the body, you know, other than that, it could have just like not even been from the same show, you know.
Totally. Yeah. Which I guess they did on purpose, as we mentioned in episode one, you had the light bulb couple.
Yeah.
I guess it was just an attempt to be like, this show is so different, right? That we can just cut away for like 5 minutes or some extended length of time and just show you something that has no relation at all to what you've been watching.
You know why they did it? Shock, because that's what the show is about.
Exactly. So it ends with Mike dropping off the Buddy Holly body in the cellar.
Of course.
Now, we get to the next scene here, Stephen. I don't know what this is all about, but Vivian, Rick, and Neil are just staring at the telly at a white dot.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean something to you?
So basically, what would happen, before you had, the TV would finish sort of around about midnight or something like that, and then right. there'd be a bit of music played and there'd be a test card, and then the signal would just, so if you left the telly on, there'd be no signal there,
right?
So it would just go down to this like white dot, I think it goes back to the old valve type TVs, you know, as well, before CRT TVs, you know, that.
We had that as kids, I think. I remember distinctly, they would, in America, they would have like, maybe like after David Letterman or something, which ended at 1:30 in the morning, and then they would play the national anthem with the little footage of like planes flying in a flag, and then there was nothing else.
Out, but I think it was static. I don't remember the white dot.
I don't remember the white dot.
That makes sense.
There was certainly plenty of times when, there was just, you turn the TV on, there would be nothing, in the middle of the night, there would be nothing on, at all.
Right.
Nothing there at all. But, one thing that did strike me with that was when Rick says, I wish I had a video so I could watch it as well. From what I've heard, a lot, you guys will tend to refer to that as a VCR rather than a video.
Right, right.
Yeah, so obviously by video, he means a video recorder. Mm-hmm. And that kind of struck with me then, because I remember in the 80s when getting our first video recorder was such a big deal. I mean, for us, that we could actually not have to miss a film at Christmas or something was just so amazing that it just reminded me, like, the very first time we got one was we only got it for Christmas, like the Christmas holidays. Like, Dad rented one for 2 weeks so we recorded all these films at Christmas and watched them in the Christmas holidays. And it wasn't until another year or so later we got our own video that we actually owned, rather than it's just kind of the novelty of video.
Oh yeah,
that nostalgia kind of thing there.
It was the same here. Yeah, I mean, even before people rented movies, they would. Yeah, the whole thing was, now you can never, you don't have to ever miss a show or a football game or something like that.
Right, and so of course the joke here being that you don't even have to miss the white dot.
Yes.
Yes. And the fact that they're just sitting there staring at it too is, again, it's just a comment on the power of television, right? That it doesn't matter that there's nothing on, you're still going to stare at the screen.
And the stupidity of them.
Yes. Yes. By the way, I want to mention at some point here, Rick calls Neil a fascist. So that comes up again. Fascist is a big thing to him, right? And Neil seems about the farthest away from a fascist. Okay, now after the others go to bed, then Vivian, I think he has a hatchet or something, and he decides to amuse himself. He's going to go downstairs to play something called Murder in the Dark.
His favorite game, Murder in the Dark. Alone.
Yes. We don't know what this is, but it obviously involves violence somehow.
Yeah.
And he has a helmet. Or does he have the helmet on?
Not yet.
Or is that? Okay.
That comes up. And that's for a very specific reason, filming-wise, by the
that's
way.
Right.
We'll get to that in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So when Rick goes upstairs to go to bed, he wants to use his bedroom, but he can't because Mike has turned it into what, Will?
A roller disco. That's referencing right. Episode one.
Right. And it actually is. He walks in. There's a few people in there on roller skates. Yeah. There's like, you know.
There's lights and stuff. Yes. And it's like a hardwood floor or something, I guess. And yeah.
Yes. So there we go. The roller disco dream has been achieved already in the new flat. And he gets kicked out by the bouncer and sort of beaten up. And the bouncer is
Robbie Coltrane. Yeah, I looked it up. Yep.
Yeah, I'd written that on here. I didn't need to look it up because I was like, yes, it is Robbie Coltrane. A very young Robbie Coltrane. Again.
Right. Who was
a big guy.
Who was a minor star in the US? Was he a pretty big actor in the UK?
He became a much bigger star in the UK. Yeah. Yeah. He was in a lot of TV shows, most famously probably for a TV show called Cracker
played in America. Some, I think, are on like,
yeah, was his most acclaimed role, but yeah, before he was very well known here before
Hagrid. He was in Nuns on the Run. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I thought I was going to ask if what were his sort of credits before Harry Potter stuff, and Nuns on the Run was
maybe not his. You know, you watch that and you think like, I'll bet this guy is better than this movie.
They're nuns undercover.
I got a look.
Do nuns usually wear makeup?
It's our day off.
Nuns in luck.
We run a teacher training college for 18 to 22-year-old girls. You have experience?
Of 18-year-old girls, yes, plenty.
Nuns in hot water.
We all share bathrooms and showers, of course. We don't tolerate nudity in any shape or form, especially our shape.
Nuns out of bounds.
Love exercise.
And nuns off their rockers.
Got any booze?
But most of all,
I want Ryan and Charlie.
Fate!
They're nuns on the run.
From now on, it's every nun for himself.
Eric Idle.
Never get away with this.
Robbie Coltrane.
This is our only chance to go straight.
You call this going straight?
Nuns on the Run. The story of an immaculate deception.
But yeah, but he kind of was a star. I mean, he was known in the U.S. even before Harry Potter.
Yeah. And I remember that Cracker. That played on, like, Discovery or something. Like, when they used to show British shows, I remember seeing commercials for
Cracker. Yeah, Cracker was quite highly acclaimed. It won quite a few awards.
So and a dramatic show, right? I mean, it was a...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, not comedy. No. Mm-hmm. Far from it.
Okay, so after getting beat up by the bouncer, Rick is told he has to share a bedroom with Neil. And this is where this is really like, I think, sort of peak Rick at his worst, right? That he comes in and just bullies Neil around, right?
Mm-hmm.
He just creates like fake arguments and things and just makes him he completely demeans Neil. But of course, Neil does nothing in his defense, right?
For now.
Yeah. And in fact, even to sort of start the fight, says, "You just called me a bastard, didn't you?" Like, just making up things, right?
Out of nowhere. Yeah.
Yes, right. But it establishes that Rick has one person who is lower.
Again, he will beat on him every chance he gets.
That's right. They're almost like kids in that regard, right?
Mm-hmm.
That there's like, the kid may feel put upon, but you know, by bigger kids or parents or whatever, but there's always like some like littler kid that he can pick on, right? And he's going to do that, right? Okay. So where are we here? So, this really cracked me up because it just really came out of nowhere that when one of them, takes the sheet off the bed, there's this, it's described as a moose head. It looks more like, I don't know, like,
I think it's
like
a deer. It's a deer.
Moose. Yeah, it's not a moose.
Deer. Yeah, right. Don't get moose in the UK.
Right. But
that's right.
The reference later is that it's a moose, but yeah, it's like a deer head, which of course is the reference to the horse head in the Godfather. Right? And they're just, you know, they're shocked by this happening, and it just is because Neil owes Mike a small amount of money.
Yes.
Yeah, £1.50 or something like ridiculously small. Yeah.
Yes, right. They would resort to these lengths to get repayment on that money. Yes. And he's just very casual about it too, the way he goes
about
it.
Yeah, he's not like mad especially. Just like, this, no. Here's how it is.
But he leaves it by saying, if this, you know, continues, there's going to be another dead moose. He says moose. Yes.
Yeah, they keep saying moose.
Yes.
Yeah there aren't any. Moose is a New World animal, I think. I don't think there's any.
Yeah, so, it really struck me. Yeah, because they'd obviously made a point to call it a moose multiple times, but it's so obviously a deer.
Yeah.
Moose
are a lot bigger than that. And they have the, you know, they have the bullwinkle antlers.
Yeah.
They're enormous. Actually, I don't know if I've ever seen one in real life.
I've seen one maybe in a zoo. They're like, they're it's enormous. Either them or bison are like the largest North American land animal. They're big.
Yes.
A lot bigger than a deer.
they're farther north than I have ever lived. So they're way up there. I know from watching The Crown that deer hunting is a thing in the UK.
Just talking, yeah. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of it around where I live, on the estates, on the hills, around Scotland where I am.
Okay, let's see. Getting back here, where are we? So the moose. Okay, then Vivian appears and announces that he has struck oil in the cellar by playing Murder in the Dark with his hatchet, yes. Right? He struck oil. Mike is very excited about this, but says they will have a house meeting the next morning, right? In the broom cupboard under the stairs. Now, before we get to that house meeting, we have puppetry, and we see that the cleaning supplies have life, which to me looks like sort of a Beauty and the Beast kind of a thing, although this would have been before
that. This would have been before Beauty and the Beast. So yeah, before the Disney, at least. So.
Yeah, so is there some other reference or something, or is it just a fun, I guess, thing to do? I don't know.
I think it was a kind of just a fun thing to do. It did make me think of a program called Spitting Image, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but that's a little bit late. Yeah, this prefigures, I believe, Spitting Image as well. So, I think it's just, the puppetry kind of pops up multiple times, doesn't it? Yeah, in each episode, and it's just like, yeah, it seems to be a thing, you know.
So then they have the house meeting, or sort of. They think they are. It's Rick and Neil, the only two who show up.
Of course.
It turns out that Mike and Vivian were having their own house meeting, and this manifests itself in the fact that Mike appears then as El Presidente, and like as you mentioned before, Vivian is like the muscle, right? Like the stormtrooper type.
Very happy. This goes back to Steven saying Vivian isn't really so much punk as he just loves violence in any form. And so
that's right. He's happy to serve in this role. This is where he has on the helmet. He has on some kind of armor or something, like some kind of flak jacket sort of.
Yeah, thing. It's like a riot, like a pleat, looks like a riot vest. Riot vest. Yes. Like that. Yeah.
And then a cricket bat.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, okay. So again, tell me, I don't know if you have any sense of, Will, if you have the same sense that I do, but to me, like even more than a baseball bat, I always thought like a cricket bat was like way like more badass, right?
What I always think of is in Spinal Tap, Ian carries one around, and I'm like, it looks like it would hurt. It looks just like a denser wood, and it would really hurt to get hit with it.
Yes.
Yeah. I've never held one. I mean, I've held plenty of baseball.
It's also shorter, I believe, than a baseball bat, right. So you could conceivably sort of carry it around a little bit more and
it kind of has that
in a way
edge to it. Yeah. He has one in Shaun of the Dead. He carries one around for a while.
Yeah, it would certainly hurt if you got hit by a cricket bat. Yeah, it would probably kill you, in fact.
Right.
Much like getting hit with a baseball bat. Yeah.
Right, which these characters get hit multiple times by Vivian in the head and other places, right, on the body. as Mike and Vivian are explaining that those two, Rick and Neil, will be the ones who will dig for the oil.
Dig for the oil.
Right. Mike even says, like, I can't do it because he's going to be having meetings. There's a bad, sort of distasteful joke here.
Yes, this is
that they even reference. They even reference within the show how distasteful this joke is, and yet they make it anyway.
But the thing is, it's also amazingly prescient.
Right.
Yeah, it actually is.
So it's kind of it was kind of in bad taste at the time, but it's not
it's become
so
more
much
true.
Now. Kind of like almost like, well, okay, this actually kind of happened.
Yes.
But not quite exactly that, but not far off.
So go watch it. You can decide for yourself on that. Okay, then we're in the cellar. where they are grudgingly, I think, digging for oil. I think Neil is actually into it. Rick is, you know, not happy with this at all.
No.
But then you get this gag where Vivian decides to join in, but instead of using a pickaxe, he's using his head with the helmet to smash, yes. Right? And they're sort of alternating, he and Neil, to the point where, of course, Neil impales Vivian with the pickaxe right through his head.
Right.
Right.
And, which doesn't slow him down much.
Well,
I mean, a little, but it doesn't kill him.
It's funny because Neil, you know, apologizes for it.
That's okay, Dale. It was bound to happen sooner or later.
He's calm.
Yes. And then he falls over, you know, unconscious. So the point, of course, the helmet works not just as good, you know, costuming for his character, but also to be able to make that gag.
Yeah. Because right? then the attach... axe is embedded in his. Yeah.
Right. Right. So there goes Vivian. And then Rick is talking to Neil about how they're going to stage a revolution. And of course, in Neil's mind, a revolution involves having a benefit rock concert.
Yes.
That's the revolution. And the band is called Radical Posture, which is not a real band. This is made up for the show, but it's Alexei Sale leading the band. His name and
not playing. Playing the landlord.
Not Jerzy Belofsky, but Jerzy's nephew. It actually has a very long name. And all I took from it is it starts with Alexei. And somewhere in there is Sputnik, or they call him Sputnik. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the band Radical Posture, and my name's Alexei, Yuri Gagarin, Siege of Stalingrad, Glorious 5-Year Plan, Sputnik, Tractor, Moscow Dynamo, Back 4, Belofsky. My dad was a bit of a communist, you know what I mean?
You know, you're the spitting image of our landlord, Jerzy.
Yeah, he's my uncle, actually, you know.
Of course, the Soviet satellite, the first satellite, yeah.
Right. And... what else have been? There's something here with peas talking to each other.
Yeah, I can't remember what that was.
The setup
they make a joke about you go together like two peas in a pod, and then the peas pipe up and say, "Oh, I found that a little bit offensive."
Yeah, you're that's right.
Comparing us. We're offensive. Very different, even though they look exactly the same. Yeah.
That's right. Jerzy, or not Jerzy, Sputnik wants his money. He's promised, 200 pounds? And. Rick then realizes he better sell tickets, but he's just sort of standing in the house.
Hoping someone's going to win the bar.
Standing in the hallway.
Yes. Makes no sense. Nobody shows up. So then he tells Neil that he must spend 200 pounds on one ticket because it's for his benefit. All he has is like, what did he have? He just had some.
It's a tiny amount.
Yes.
Because he owes Mike all that money.
Right. Which then Rick takes, but then I guess that's enough to start the show. And this, I just found this quite charming. Just the way Alexei Sale does the whole stage banter kind of thing to like no one. I just really enjoyed it a lot.
Woo! Okay, yeah. Hey, it's really great to be here at this benefit, actually. Woo! Yeah. I'm feeling really kind of, woo! Okay, yeah. Hey, you're feeling okay. Woo! Yeah, all right. Yeah. Woo! All right, yeah. This is really funky. It's like one big kind of empty room here. Yeah. Woo! All right. Okay.
Just like in kind of freestyling, isn't it? Yes. Really, it's just yeah.
Yes. And then he references songs that bring people together, and he doesn't say it, but he's talking about Ebony and Ivory.
Clearly
and
talking about it. Yeah.
Piano and that song was inescapable back then. I mean,
that's
it was
right.
Everywhere.
That's right. But what is the one thing that that unites us?
That's right. It's Dr. Martin's boots.
Dr. Martin's boots. And I love that he says doctor, too, that it's not Dr.
That's right,
Martin's.
He does, doesn't
Dr.
he?
Martin's boots. And then he sings a song about Dr. Martin's boots. And at one point, it even drifts into Don't You Want Me, the Human League song, right? And but it's really quite absurd. And I'll just take this moment to mention, I believe this was my... first my introduction to Doc Martens. Like I don't think registered in my mind before then, because I didn't really get into like punk and the sort of punk, the music or the image and stuff until I went to college, and this would have been on right before then. So I was like, what are they talking about? This is really interesting to me. And of course, you know, now I have Doc Martens, right? But at the time it seemed sort of exotic or weird.
That is really interesting, isn't it? Like a slight tangent there with Dr. Martens, how you got this what was basically built as a comfort shoe became this fashion icon. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy, really. You, again, it became cool because it was not even trying. It was there was no attempt. They made no attempt to be cool. They just became cool, you know, by accident, right. And now they're known for being cool rather than being just a very comfortable shoe.
There's even some mention in his song about the Airflow soles, right? All right, Rick, of course, is disgusted by this whole thing. This is not what he wanted the revolution to be.
No.
And he has what I'm going to say right now is my favorite line in this episode.
God, do you think Devil Woman had never been written?
So again, a Cliff Richard reference in a very sly, bizarre way. As if that's like a revolutionary song, Devil Woman.
Yes, is it? Yeah, which again, of course, it's not by any stretch of the imagination, but... There's a few little references in that kind of whole sequence that I highlighted in case they sort of skated by you.
Yes.
I think Mike walks in and says, oh, what's going on here? I wanted to watch Postman Pat. I don't know, Postman Pat? That's another very long-running children's program about Postman Pat and his black and white cat. Like, very young age group, it's aged at, like a sort of stop-motion type of thing. Yeah.
Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat and his black and white cat. Early in the morning, just as day is dawning, he picks up all the post bags in his van. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat and his black and white cat. All the birds are singing and the day is just beginning. Pat feels he's a really happy man. Everybody knows his bright red van. All his friends will smile as he waves to greet them. Maybe you can never be sure. There'll be knock, ring, letters through your door. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat and his black and white cat. All the birds are singing and the day is just beginning. Pat feels he's a really happy man.
There's a reference to Norman Tebbit, who was a British politician, Mrs. Thatcher's kind of more right-wing enforcer. Very famous for making a speech about people should get on their bike and find a job, and and sort of immigrants being should take the cricket test to see who they support if England was playing India and stuff like this. So again, he would be a hate figure for left-wing students at this time. And then Neil talks about when Rick tries to get £200 from Neil for the ticket, he says, "Oh, that's my whole of my student grant," which back in those days you would get a grant from the government to study, like just be given each term money to live on, you know, which doesn't happen anymore. I haven't happened for a long time.
But it never happened here.
Yeah. But at that time, yeah, you basically got free. Yeah. You'd have a grant funded degree course or something and that would help go towards your living costs. So again, I wondered whether that just a few little references
that might have skated by. Like that. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And then the show just kind of ends, right?
Yeah, this one really stops. Yeah. And we never see any oil, do we?
I don't think
so. That sort of black hole in the middle of the basement, yeah. Isn't it? It's kind of implied that it's in there, but you don't see it emerge.
I thought there'd be like oil spouting, you know, some craziness with that.
Like Beverly Hillbillies.
Texas Tea.
There you go. So there you go. That's episode two.
I felt this episode overall was... You could feel it's starting to get somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Now the characters are a bit more established, and you can see that, okay, there's obviously more to come here.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. I enjoyed
this episode much more than the first
yep.
one.
Yep.
Even to the little, just at the very start when you got the guy, the statue.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Talking to each other bizarrely, like, and then suddenly they go, "Oh, it's actually a guy just sitting really still." And you know,
yeah. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, "That's not a statue. That's a guy."
Right. When they're entering that very first scene, when they're entering the statue comes alive for a moment. Yes. Yeah. Not to them, to the viewer. And the flower, too, the sunflower. They're like,
yeah. Yeah.
The conversation.
Yes. All right. Thanks very much, guys. We'll do this again next week with episode 3. Of the young ones. As I mentioned, anyone can comment. We'd love to hear from you. At some point, we'll do some listener feedback on this. You can call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. Or email rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on the social medias @suburbspod. All right. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
On behalf of Patrick Foster, I'm Jim Lenihan, and we'll talk to you all later.
There's only one thing that unites us, one thing that we all have in common. What is it? What is that one thing that unites us? It's not class or ideology, colour, creed or roots. The only thing that unites us is Dr. Martin's boots. Dr. Martin gave boots to the world so that everybody can be free. They're classless, matchless, he was just washed from retail for only £19.99. Pretty soon everybody be wearing those boots with the airflow soles, and your boots will have a meeting, and your boots will take control. Thanks to Dr. Martin, everybody moved to one beat. Thanks to Dr. Martin, they'll be dancing in the street. No, don't you want me? Okay, boots, do your stuff!
Yeah, don't believe everything you see in the Crown. Once it got to the most recent series, I had to stop watching it because it's like, okay, I can remember a lot of this stuff happening now,
and
there's just so much stuff is made up. It's just like,
oh, I'm sure,
ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
I don't know.
I like the scene where my wife was watching. I like the scene where they were flipping around the channels and they saw Beavis and Butthead on the channels. That was my favorite moment in the Crown. The idea of the Queen glimpsing Beavis and Butthead.
That was when it was such a funny scene because William was helping Elizabeth like figure out how to use like cable television or
that's very
or satellite
TV. That is universal.
Something like that. Yes, the grandson helps the grandmother, right? No, I take that as total truth, Stephen. The whole show.
It's a documentary, right?
As far as I'm concerned, that's exactly how everything happened.